You're tuned into a very special edition of the Crispy Critics here today on 88.1 FM KVSC St. Cloud. We're going to be talking with Jamie Stewart of Shoo Shoo, and of course past bands like Ten in the Swear Jar and iBopa. We're going to go over his release catalog and discuss touring and all sorts of other great stuff. So here you go. Here's Jamie Stewart of Shoo Shoo.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Thank you.
That's okay. Well, how are you today?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I slept a little late, but happy to get into the studio and do an interview. All right. Well, are you still living in San Francisco, or you're out in California somewhere?
Yeah, I live in Oakland, which is right next to San Francisco.
Okay. Well, how's you recently moved?
No, I moved about 3 years ago.
Oh, okay. Right.
But I had lived here before. I lived in Seattle, and then moved to Seattle for a couple of years, and then moved back.
Okay. You're more of a Cali guy then? Enjoy the California?
Yeah, I grew up in Los Angeles my whole life, and then moved to the Bay Area. So, yes.
I was kind of curious. I wanted to kind of start off with 10 in the Swear Jar, which I just heard, I think it was Accordion Solo, they just re-released it, or the kind of compilation of your tracks. What happened there? How did 10 in the Swear Jar kind of devolve into Shoo Shoo?
Let's see.
Or evolve, sorry. either way.
I hope evolve. Maybe not, though. Let's see. The everyone who was in that band had been in another band prior to that with two other people, and then those two people got kicked out, but the people who were in that previous band wanted to keep playing and then started attending the Swear Jar. But that band actually only lasted for probably, I think, almost a year exactly. I think the reason that it had imploded was that everybody had already been playing together for like 3 years before that band had even started. And it seemed to me that it had, I don't know, that group of people playing together had sort of gone as far as it was going to go. And at that time I had yet to be doing music full time, but it's what I wanted to do. And no one else in the band really realistically wanted to do that, as if it's that realistic in the first place. But everybody except for Corey McCulloch, I think, was doing music mostly as a hobby, so it seemed like if he and I were going to become serious in a for real serious band, then it was going to take a little bit of culling. So we stopped that band and then started something else. That being Shoo Shoo.
All right. Well, was it kind of a sharp transition from going from the sounds of 10 in the Swear Jar, which I wouldn't say maybe necessarily more mainstream, but to like Shoo Shoo is this like amazing, like completely unprecedented band. Was it different shifting from one thing to another, or was that like why you wanted to?
It was kind of like a attitudinal shift, and that's nice of you to say. Thank you. I think with 10 in the Swear Jar, we were really trying to. This is going to sound really sort of clunky, lame, but I had never. I mean, I didn't, you know, grow up listening to indie rock or anything like that, and wasn't really interested in it, and still now not interested in it. I find most of it really dull. But about that year. Like I had first just sort of come across the sort of pantheon of quote unquote indie rock. And I was trying to make like an indie rock band in the sort of somewhat narrow parameters of what that is, you know, with a little bit of other influences, but I think very pointedly trying to do something that I thought people would like rather than trying to do something good. And I think, there's some 10 in the Swear Jar songs that I obviously really love. I mean, clearly as Shoo Shoo has redone them, that I think as songs work, but I think just aesthetically it was pretty narrow. I think with Shoo Shoo, the plan was just to, I think actually, it was right before I turned 30, and I told myself that if I turned 30 and no one had ever put any records of ours out, any record that I had ever done out, that I was going to just quit music and go to grad school. So it was sort of an attempt to make the last best record that I could possibly make. And, you know, luckily for me, 5RC ended up putting out the first record like within 2 months of my 30th birthday, so it's the last possible moment. But I think it was just an attempt to really pointedly say, you know, I don't care what anybody thinks about what we're going to be doing. I'm not going to work on promoting this. I'm just going to spend all my time trying to make a really, you know, the best record that I could possibly make. I mean, whether or not it's any good, I don't know, but it was certainly the best that I could have done at the time. That being the focus, as opposed to the focus of trying to make something that I thought someone would, and like presupposing what someone's imagined taste might be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, completely. It's a very, very commendable, okay, actually, to set out to do something.
I was desperate, considering that if I didn't work out, I was going to quit music, which I didn't want to do. So,
well, I'm glad you did.
could us not post? It must be as her quitting herself as her, but sit with me.
So 10 in the Swear Jar, I of course started with Shoo Shoo, and I had heard of 10 in the Swear Jar, and eventually I was able to come across some of the music. But what drove you to revisit like Hellzebot and Sad Girl? Like they're really, I had heard the Shoo Shoo versions first, and I was really I was very excited by the 10 in the Swear Jar versions as well, because they were different and almost maybe more rocky. But what returned you to the material? You just really liked the songs, or you felt you could do them better?
I guess it was, yeah, I mean, it was, they were, well, I mean, prior to that compilation coming out, I mean, basically, 10 in the Swear Jar had just, like, self-released, like, you know, like 1,000 copies of this one. We did a CD with 8 songs, and then an EP with 4 songs on it. And then I guess did record another record that was never released. I mean, that we didn't even put out ourselves, aside from Before Recording Solo. So I just figured, you know, that no one was ever, that I liked the songs in and of themselves, but no one was ever going to hear them, you know, because it was, I mean, we didn't even sell all the copies. I think we sold like half of them, and I think the rest are sitting in a basement somewhere. So I don't know. I just didn't want songs that I thought were, you know, as songs to go to waste, basically. And they still meant something to me. And because some time had passed, the meaning had shifted also. So, I mean, any of the older songs which we had redone, it was just for those reasons that they still seem relevant, but they seem relevant in a different way that was aesthetically interesting to re-explore, and just because I didn't want them to go to waste.
Fair enough. So one of the things I just heard about the covers album a little while back, where I suppose it's got a few of your covers on there, but it's a lot of groups covering you. How did that come about? Are you a big fan of people covering your music, or like?
I think prior to that, I don't know that it had ever happened aside from 1/7 inch. It came from wanting to. I used to go to dance clubs a lot, and it stopped a few years ago, or had stopped for a couple of years, but then recently started going again, and found myself being yet again moved by dance music, and initially posited the idea to the record label about doing a flat dance remix record. But we actually couldn't get any dance producers except for one to do a remix. But we were able to get kind of art rock people to do remixes. And then our booking agent made the suggestion of asking people to do covers also. It wasn't the initial plan, but I think the covers disc on Avon actually turned out a lot better than the remix part of it. So, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sort of fading off on this.
That's okay.
But it was I don't know, it was extraordinarily flattering that the people that we asked to do it said yes. We're really, really huge fans of everyone who did it. So.
All right. Do you have another album kind of on the way? You seem like you put out kind of a steady stream, like you're always working, whether it be EPs or splits, or very consistent with getting albums out there. Do you have something kind of on the back burner now or planned?
Yeah, we have something that's done now that's coming out in January.
Is it hard for you to keep creating so steadily? Like it definitely seems like your quality never goes down, which is hard to say of other bands when they put out, you know, an album a year. There's usually, you know, they're kind of rushed. But do you feel rushed at all, or do you feel like your quality ever suffers?
Oh, I hope it doesn't. I mean, I hope if and when it eventually does, I hope that we're aware of it and quit ahead of time. I I don't know that I really feel rushed. I feel really compelled to keep working all the time for a few reasons. One, it's this extraordinary opportunity to be able to make records, and I, you know, was only able to do it, not that I'm old, but, you know, I wasn't able to do it until I turned 30. So, I had been trying to do it prior to that for like 10 years, and, you know, no one was interested in what I was working on. So, you know, I still feel this kind of, this almost sort of fearful blind luck of having it worked out, and figured I had better keep doing it until people catch on or something. And then also, you know, I mean, working on music is totally incredibly wonderful to do. It's not like it's a drag to do it. It's what I want to do. I mean, I do it every day, and you know, it's this central part of my life. And additionally, I don't know, I feel like I sort of talked about this ad infinitum, but you know, I have some really severe problems with depression and related to a lot of things, and it really helps kind of keep that in check. You know, like if I have something constructive to focus on, then I don't do stupid things. So, I mean, for all those reasons. I mean, it's self-preservation, and because I totally love it and feel really lucky to do it.
Yeah, and so it kind of,
you know, the motivation for working all the time.
Wow. You do put out like just an amazing level of you know, there's always, you know, as soon as you're starting to jones for some shoo-shoo, there's another album around the corner or a song to tide you over. So it's always been very nice. I just got in on you with Fabulous Muscles back when that first came out. I was DJing here, and it was kind of the favorite album around the station, and latched on to you. But yeah, I was always wondering about the it just seems like you put out so much, and it never, as far as I'm concerned, I've never seen a decline in quality whatsoever. It's always something new and amazing.
But, thanks.
No problem.
So we finished this last record, and I'm in the midst of trying to write songs for the next one. I'm having a really hard time. So. Perhaps this not the record we have coming up, but the next one will eventually, finally, be terrible.
Well, I doubt it, but hopefully not. Do you find, do you have like lulls like that, creative lulls, where you're not getting as much done as you would like, or it's not coming through?
It always happens like right after we finish a record, you know, like in the sort of space between the record comes out and when it's done. I think it's just being in the shadow of the last record a whole lot, or just trying to shake away some of the old ideas or older parameters, or, you know, or the things that define the other record to attempt to not repeat them so much. I don't know, it can be kind of daunting. And then just, I don't know, it's just a matter of keeping at it, and then you eventually kind of hit some sort of, or hopefully hit some sort of new stride and get going off in this other potentially productive direction. Right now it's taking a lot of work, though. Well, I have absolutely no idea what to work on. I have no idea what to do.
Well, hopefully it all evens out. Are you ever really, are you surprised by the success of the group, or were you surprised at the initial reaction to it, that people were so warm towards it?
Oh, I, Yeah. I mean, I'm still constantly amazed, you know, that any of this has worked out. I mean, you know, from like a business standpoint, it's not that surprising. I mean, we're on a really cool label, we have a really good publicist and a good booking agent, and we work really hard, you know, so just in a kind of on paper practical way, it sort of, you know, makes sense that, you know, we've done just a tiny bit better every year. I mean, and when I say a tiny bit, really a tiny bit, but insofar as just the way that, just how generous people are with what they have to say to us about the group is just really mind-boggling and extraordinary to me. I appreciate it tremendously. The people who seem to be interested in what we're doing are extraordinarily sweet to us. We're very, 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 very fortunate band.
Do you, on the other side of the coin, do you ever, like, say you're on a mismatched bill? I think I heard a story from a friend the other night who, the first time he saw you, I think he said you opened for a kind of an interesting hip-hop crowd, and, do you ever...
Oh, would have been in Minneapolis, I remember that.
Was that, do you run into that a lot, where... mismatched might be kind of not the best word, but like an interesting bill where possibly, you know, half the audience doesn't know you. Do you run into ever any problems with that, or do you?
Well, not so much anymore, because usually when we tour now, we're the headlining band. So, I mean, people, I mean, if anyone's there, they come to, you know, they know who we are. I mean, they come on purpose. But that's, I mean, that certainly used to happen a lot in the first couple of years of touring. You know, I mean, you know, sometimes people totally, I mean, still, sometimes people really hate it. Say the meanest stuff. Oh, my God. For as nice as the nice people are, the mean people are really nasty to us. And I started, I don't know, you would think that as I have been doing this for longer and longer that it would bother me less, but I find it just bothers me more and more. I take it really personally.
Well, yeah, I imagine your heart's kind of right out there in front of everybody with the group and... Do you have any particular tales that you would care to share from
people have just yelled some unbelievably mean stuff from stage, and we used to react really like, go, I would just try and say like the meanest possible thing I could say, like that if they didn't shut up I was gonna, you know, like rape their baby cousin or something, you know, like I was just like trying to just shock them into submission, or, you know, that I hope their like zombie grandmother like rose from the grave and stuffed her like maggot filled breast on their throat or something, you know, I mean, I just like reacted like as harshly as I could possibly react. Now we'd never say anything ever. People throw stuff periodically. Someone threw lit cigarettes at me all an entire set once. That was pretty over the top. One band member on a tour, someone jumped up on stage and punched her in the chest. That was pretty incredibly crappy. But I mean, as I've said now, I mean, in the last couple of years, I mean, you know, I mean, we're not like hugely famous or anything like that, but, you know, I mean, people are coming to the show on purpose, so they tend to be nicer. But I mostly now just journalists say some pretty horrible stuff about it. Just, even people are really nice and say nice things too, but ooh, when people write mean stuff, they write mean stuff.
Is there maybe a certain side to that? Are you a little maybe satisfied that your music provokes them so much? Because it must be, you know, pretty powerful.
I used to feel that way, you know, like, oh, well, at least people are reacting strongly to it, and now it just hurts my feelings. So I for the last record, I promised myself I wasn't going to read any reviews at all, but I read a bunch, and a couple, like, this is so pathetic, but a couple actually made me cry. It's really bad. So for this upcoming record, I'm under no circumstances going to read any reviews, good or bad, whatsoever. I know it's really silly for me to take such things to heart. I mean, especially considering that the sort of music that people who, you know, that they do seem to like, I think is complete crap. So I don't know. It's silly. I'm too sensitive about this kind of thing. It's a huge waste of energy.
Oh, onto your tongue, hand a knife up to me. No mouth, no neck, no rest. The white bone of self-existence with you. The
You're tuned into the Crispy Critics on KVSC. Today we're speaking with Jamie Stewart of Shoo Shoo. Are you ever finding that touring gets repetitive, or are you always excited to get back on the road?
It gets exhausting, just physically exhausting. But the playing part is really, you know, really extraordinary. I never don't feel like playing. I mean, I don't feel like being in the car for 10 hours, or I don't feel like carrying our equipment around, you know, and I don't feel like sleeping in a motel and eating at Denny's. I always want to play. Right now, I'm really itching to go. I mean, the last time we were on tour we ended in April, and then won't tour again until March, so it will have been almost a year. We played a few shows in Europe, but it was just, you know, like a long tour. This is the longest we've ever not been on tour. It's funny. It's funny being at home so much.
Do you have any anybody lined up for tour mates coming up?
I think, and we've talked to, and I don't know if this is happening or not. I think Purient, who's a really really harsh noise guy and does stuff with, like, it's kind of amalgamation of waves and sound waves together that I guess I've never seen. I just heard his records, but I've heard the live thing is really amazing, where they somehow become physically disorienting, the interaction between the physicality of the air moving and the way that the light waves are moving. And then Marissa Nadler, do you know who that is?
Yeah, we just got her, is it Songs 3 is the new album?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know if that, I mean, these are people that we've asked, and I think it's in the works. I don't know if it's going to work, though. I hope so. I like both the music a lot.
You played the Triple Rock with the Dirty Projectors. Did you do a bunch of dates with them, or?
Yeah, we did. We did a two-month tour last year, and we were trying to tour with them for one month of the 2 months.
How was that for you? Did you enjoy that? Are you fans of Dave Longstreth and the Marriage Records crew, or?
I shan't say a word.
Okay. It was an interesting concert. He was really getting into it with the PA guy. I thought that was really interesting. But
yeah, he was a real dick that night.
The PA guy?
That PA guy is a real sweetheart. And yeah, Dave was a dick that night. Anyway, sorry.
That's okay.
I called Dave a dick on the radio. He was a dick that night. Anyway, sorry. That's really funny and really depressing that you remember that. See, that's just a testament to how over the top he was. That was probably in like September or something. That was almost a year ago, and you still remember. That is the aspect of the show that you remembered. Yep. That's depressing.
I think I was actually... Anyway. It was the night we celebrated Halloween, and we had to hustle back to St. Cloud after that. But it was an interesting show. Do you...
That's a nice save. Sorry, yeah. I just cut my mouth shut. Anyway.
That's okay. Are there any tours that are more memorable to you regarding whether, you know, opening acts or maybe just the excitement of an album taking off particularly well? Or?
I don't think there's any tour that I don't remember. I mean, there's certainly... That was so maudlin. there's definitely, you know, I mean, aspects to every tour that are, I mean, that, you know, certainly stay with you. It's, you know, generally a month of your life, you know, that's really physically and emotionally intense, so something comes up. Our last tour, actually, not the one we were just discussing, but the one we did after that, I think was my favorite tour we've ever done. Just the audiences were really great. I think it was the best we ever played, which was nice because I thought on the tour that we were just discussing, we didn't play very as well as I had wanted to, and was a little depressed about it. But it was a nice reprieve to know that we still had it in it. And it was just long enough, and the set was, I think we came up with a combination of songs that people seemed to really respond to, which was cool. And so just for sheer enjoyment, that one was memorable. But I think the first time after Fabulous Muscles came out, when we got a little bit better known and had the first show that we were ever doing, that there were actually people at. Like, prior to that, like, we were lucky if there was like 20 people at a show or something. And that was the first tour that in bigger cities we were selling out shows. That was pretty remarkable. The first time we went to Europe, I remember pretty well also. It was a really strange combination of playing a lot of really big sold-out shows, which was exciting, and then a lot of really bizarre shows in, like, basements of churches, you know, that were, you know, that used to be this pagan church or something like that. I don't know. I'm rambling.
That's
the short
right.
answer is yes. During rules.
Is there a big international following, or is it, like, specific areas that it seemed to have really taken a liking to you, or...?
Pretty well in Europe. We haven't toured in Japan, but this upcoming record will be released there. It's the first time we'll have a record out there, so I have no idea how that's going to go. But we do pretty well all over Europe and then in the U.S. and Canada. We've played in some pretty far away, bizarre places, which has been really remarkable and weird.
You're tuned into 88.1 FM, KVSC St. Cloud, your sound alternative. We are currently in the middle of an interview with Shoo Shoo's Jamie Stewart.
Yeah, it's got to be interesting to be playing somewhere that's like not a typical venue. Do you? I've heard stories of people doing, you know, parking lot shows and laundromat shows and, you know, basements of churches. Are there any really odd places you've been? Or
like regionally or places or like physical spaces in which we've played?
Both. We'll go with both.
We played in an abandoned gas station once. As I said, it wasn't like a church basement. I mean, it was a 2,000-year-old cathedral in Italy that used to be this place where there was this, like, pre-Christian death cult. So I don't even know if a church is really the right way to put it. It was sort of this pit of former human sacrifice. And I don't know. And then we played in some really weird countries. Like, we played in Serbia. I guess not weird, but just unusual. We played in Serbia. We played in Mexico. We played in Taiwan recently. That was really amazing. Actually, the show in Taiwan was at this gigantic music festival that I think they said there was something like 80,000 people there or something, which was, you know, I mean, if we play to like 400 people or something, that's like a lot of people for us to play to. So that was, it was just strange to look out and not be able to see the end of how many people were there. And yeah, and it was at like the beach. I don't know. It was really weird that they had us playing there. But it was great. Apparently the guy who organizes it gets all this money from the Chinese government, and they have money like each year for like one international band. So basically he keeps a bunch of Chinese bands that he knows that the crowd will like. But then he's a really big fan of all kinds of music. So he always books one band that he's going to like. you know, but he had like Aphex Twin and Vincent Gallo the years before. You know, but then amidst all this, you know, like really horrible, like Chinese new metal band, you know, that are really hugely popular there. But, you know, nobody there had ever, you know, had any idea, you know, who we were at all. But we're like freaking out over, you know, just, I mean, as people generally do at huge festivals, just freaking out over the worst bands in the world. It would be sort of the equivalent of, you know, at like Lollapalooza if they had, you know, some, like, I can't even think of what a parallel would be.
Just a guy with a mandolin.
Once again, rambling about really stupid crap.
That's okay. Where did the tour photo book come from? Like, was that out of maybe boredom and just taking pictures, and you wanted to show people?
Oh, that was David's idea, who is our tour manager, who's also a really wonderful photographer. He is wise enough to make art projects for himself while he's on tour. I mean, when you're playing on tour, I mean, you have something to focus on, but when you're just kind of along doing a small amount of administrative sort of things, every other tour manager we've had has gone out of their mind and become a complete liability on tour rather than an asset. I don't know where he got the idea from. He had the idea of asking people on tour to just bring a self-addressed stamp envelope and a book of Polaroids, and he would take pictures of the Polaroids on tour, and I think and then mail them back to the people, and with the caveat that he could, you know, scan them and, you know, keep them later. And I think on the first tour, like, you know, like 20 people did it. He's done it three times. And on the second one, maybe 50. But then on the last one, for some reason, it really took off. And I think he got like 1,000 packages of Polaroids from people or something, completely mind-boggling like that. Like, he couldn't take enough. Like, he was taking pictures all day long of anything. It became really, really peculiar to have your picture taken all of the time. Not in some sort of, you know, kind of rock setting, but like, you know, when we were eating or when we were at a rest stop or, you know, when I was giving myself a haircut in the motel or when we were drunk or something. It became just really disembodying, you know, knowing that other people were going to be seeing the photos, like specifically that people were going to be getting them. And that they would be one of a kind and that they probably would not be largely disseminated. Like, it wasn't like, okay, this is for a press photo. There's some sort of wider point to it rather than some sort of very tiny, intimate point to it. But because it was a kind of tiny, intimate point and so completely pervasive, it became just really disembodying. You know, like, there was the line between what was, this is going to sound really stupid, but what was an art project and what was your regular life was completely gone. You know, and when we were just the ways, I mean, and we found ourselves like trying to set up situations partially out of boredom and partially out of an attempt to make sure that people, when they did get the photos, didn't get really boring photos, like trying to purposely set up situations in which we could just be doing really preposterous things that could potentially yield some interesting photos. It was on a tour that was too long also, so by the end we were completely, completely melted. But I guess the book, like, some real publisher is putting out a collection of the books, I guess, comes out next month.
Yeah, it sounds like they're really, they garnered quite a bit of attention. I remember a Pitchfork posted some link to some of the pictures, and
yeah, I think they did it like 3 or 4 times or something. David really came up with a really exciting idea, despite the fact that it almost ruined my life. But
well, it is a fantastic little way to get a snapshot of, because I mean, for the average person, who knows what's really going on the tour? As far as we know, you play shows and you sit in a hotel, but it's kind of nice to see that you guys are off, you know, having fun or just experiencing mundane life. But I don't know. I enjoy the idea of them. I haven't actually, I've looked at them online, but I haven't purchased a book for myself. But
he did a good job. He's, I don't know, I think it seems to be something that people get something from. I think that's really nice about it.
Say, have you heard of this Dom character from L.A. that sounds exactly like you? Have you?
Who?
Dom, D-O-M-M-M.
Is it a band or a singer? Or?
It's one guy. We got a CD maybe like 6 months ago, and immediately it's, wow, this somebody's knocking off Shushu. Not to say it's not, you know, it has some air, but it's blatantly, it's very, very much late. You haven't heard of them, huh? Oh, wow. This is, yeah, you should check into this. It's kind of a mind boggling.
Is it good?
It's okay. I mean, it's not, it's good for what it is, but you can't really maybe judge it on its own merits because it's so obviously, you know, a take on this. Like, there's no way it could be naturally created in a vacuum, and you guys have both ended up with the sound. So,
yeah.
Have you, what do you think about that Phil Spector trial? Have you heard anything about this? It recently was declared a mistrial.
I heard that he went to trial, and then it was a mistrial or something, but I didn't hear what the details were.
Yeah, I guess that's just what I heard yesterday, that there was a mistrial, and I thought that was, I don't know, it's been this Paul kind of hanging over the music industry for a while. Like, what's going to happen with Phil Spector?
Well, I mean, as genius as he was, I mean, he killed somebody. I mean, I mean, how is it a mistrial?
I don't know.
It
doesn't really make any sense.
It's, I mean, the whole thing is just, there's nothing good about it.
I don't know. Apparently, a certain amount of celebrity will buy you some leeway. That's apparently the way it's looking.
I don't know. That's really just everything. I mean, obviously, the woman's death is extraordinarily depressing, and what you just said is extraordinarily depressing.
Mm-hmm. Do you follow celebrity culture at all, or are you just kind of turned off by the whole thing?
I don't know. Sometimes I think it's really interesting sociologically. You know, I mean, I certainly, for fun, will read Us Weekly once in a while. You know, just aghast, almost, you know, and amused. And then also, you know, it's nice looking at good-looking people sometimes. I mean, not so much. I mean, I think I'm into it in, like, the snobbiest way possible.
Kind of the looking at the train wreck type thing?
Not even in a judgmental way, but just, I mean, just as I had said, in a sociological way, you know, I don't know, it's so snooty, I don't know.
All right, well, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me, and I guess I'll be seeing you on the next tour there, buddy.
Okay, yeah, please say hi if you get a chance.
Thanks to Jamie Stewart for taking the time to speak with us this week. Shushu, of course, have a new album coming out in January, and I'm sure you'll be able to catch them on tour right around that time in Minneapolis. We'll be back next week on the Crispy Critics with some more reviews of new music that we got down here at the station. Until then, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.